like to call to order the March 13, 2018 meeting of the Terry Township Board of Supervisors and ask that those in attendance stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Joe, may I please have the roll call?
Member Rick Samuda?
Here.
Member Susan Kort?
Here.
Member Matt Weir?
Here.
Member Dustin Engel?
Here.
Chairman Mark Moyer?
Here. Although it is posted within the meeting room, I want to advise those persons attending this meeting that it is and has been the policy of Terry Township to record all public meetings for the purpose of providing an accurate minutes. The Board of Supervisors did, in fact, meet for executive session prior to tonight's meeting to discuss land and legal issues. First order of business is the approval of meeting minutes from the Board of Supervisors meeting of February 27, 2018. Right after visitor public comments. So, anyone who desires to address the Board of Supervisors, I ask that they approach the podium, identify themselves by stating their name and their place of residence, and if you'd be so kind as to limit your remarks to 3 minutes or less.
I'm Teresa Peschel, and I live over on Half Street by the Reese Factory side. I was at the Downtown Hershey Association meeting, and I found out about the True by Hilton Hotel. And I was interested because they're going to be putting this on the old Memmi's Bakery site. And if you have not seen True by Hilton, it is an avant-garde shoebox made out of multicolored Legos. And it's about 5 stories high, and I would like the township board to think about what this is going to look like looming over the western side of town if they make it 5 stories. All the pictures of all of the trues I saw online were 4 to 5 stories high, and it will be eye-grabbing. If you would like to see one that actually exists, they have one out on 30 heading east to Gap on US 30 right outside of Lancaster. The other point I would like to make, I read carefully through your planning progress, and I see things that could go wrong when you assume that you're going to earn some income and you assume that your maintenance costs are going to go down and you assume that you're going to get all of those track meets coming in, all of those swim meets. What happens if those things do not happen? How much will the taxes for the township residents go up so we can pay for our beautiful new rec center? And I just want the board to think of those things. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Anyone else? Mr. Moyer.
Yeah, my name is Larry Moyer. I live up at Stoppers Church Road with Tom Roy, Provolone Board. I'm here about 2 issues. The one is with Laura Schiavone. She's putting her water and sewer slop comes down there in the basin. It's about this high on that side of the road. That's how much I built it up when I cleaned that little pond out not long ago and I put all that up there where it was dipped, you know, landscaped. Anyways, it's still a problem, and she knows about the problem, and I wouldn't even want to make a remark that she made to me, that I was her best friend until I wouldn't give her a right-of-way on my road. And I would like to know why the township can't do anything about this. This water and silt is coming down there. You can come out and look at it. I don't know if he'd be responsible to come out. You guys come out. This is not called for to come on my land because you want to tax me with a rain tax, and yet the water's all coming off of this Laura Schiavone, and she's bragging that it's here at $13 million with it. She should have enough money to put a little rain silk in there. There's no issue there. Nobody's doing anything for me there. And the other second issue is somebody back in her farm shot and almost killed me 3 weeks ago tomorrow with a bullet. And that was and went and damaged $5,200 worth of stuff. The brand new window, an antique picture, the curtain, and the drywall is plastered. And we have to do that whole room over, all because somebody's denying that they were back there. Now, I that's in the police's hand, but they should certainly, by now, find out who that was, because tomorrow's 3 weeks, and they know somebody who done it. I know one thing, every time I hear a shot now, I call the township, the police department, but somebody's dragging their feet. I admire this township, and I don't think it should take 3 weeks to find out who this character was that shot that bullet.
Thank you, Mr. Moyer. Had you discussed with Chuck the soap issue, and if you haven't, if you would, that would be appreciated.
Mr. Emmerich.
Oh.
Chuck Emmerich.
Well, he can come out with that. He knows
okay.
about it.
All right. And you did say the police are notified of a shooting incident?
Oh, yeah. They were out, and the state police.
Okay.
But nothing happened.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Moyer. Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Pam Ruddle, and I live at 241 Bahia Avenue in Hershey. I'm basically here just to thank you, supervisors, for your leap of faith in this new rec center, Moeller Center building. I think it is really needed. My family has lived in this township for 28 years, but my kids have been at that pool for 18 and have been swimming competitively. I see a lot at the rec center. It has employed three of my kids as lifeguards, so we feel very attached to having a vibrant rec center, and I know that that's what you're hoping to by your leap of faith and moving forward. So I just want to thank you, make a public record of thanking you for moving forward. I also, for the concerns of, you know, will you bring the swim meets in, there is no doubt in my mind that you will bring those large swim meets in as a way for revenue. My family has spent a lot of money in a lot of different places, whether it be Lancaster, State College, Maryland, Virginia, and we spend hotels, we spend food, and you will not have an issue bringing revenue in through those kind of swim meets. So I thank you very much.
Thank you, Pam. And we will be having a capital campaign for the project, whatever that project will be, so you'll have an opportunity to contribute to that as well in the future. Anyone else? Hearing none, we will turn to the approval of the minute meeting for the Board of Supervisors, February 27, 2018 meeting. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Approved by Mr. Engel.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Weir. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, those minutes are approved unanimously. The new business, A1 through 54, is consideration of the adoption of the ordinance number 703, authorizing the issuance of future general obligation bonds in the amount of $25 million for the Recreation Center project on or before June 1st, 2019, and the adoption of the associated resolution number 1549, authorizing a cash settlement hedge for $25 million with a mandatory termination date of on or about June 1st, 2019.
Okay. I've been instructed to observe the same 3-minute public comment for my section. So I'll quickly just introduce the team that you're going to hear from tonight. I'm just going to give you a quick background on the resolution and the ordinance that you have. Then Scott Shear and John Fry from PFM, who are serving as your financial advisor on this transaction, will review really the bulk of the details. And then David Twiddell from Eckerd Siemens will actually review the ordinance and resolution that you have for your consideration. Backing up, about 6 months ago, the financing team began working with the administration and with the board on evaluating financing options for the rec center project. And while we've been looking at all those different options, revenue sources, structuring the debt, one of the things that we've also been cognizant of is what's happening with interest rates. And as all of you are probably aware, in the fall, interest rates continued to start moving higher. We've seen them slowly moving higher this year. And so the financing team started to think about what are the options to try and locked in an interest rate now for that proposed borrowing that will happen really a year from now when you're ready to begin construction of the project. So we've been evaluating what the best strategy was. Tonight we're bringing that to you for your consideration, which is an interest rate hedge contract where we enter that contract at today's interest rates. It's just in place until next year, so it's short term. It's not a long term contract like some of the other contracts that we've done previously. So it's just basically a little over 1 year contract, and then we will issue traditional fixed rate bonds like we have to finance every other project that we've ever paid for here at the township. So that's what we have for your consideration tonight, is the ordinance that authorizes the issuance of $25 million of bonds a year from now, and obviously going with that, as you mentioned, capital campaign that will raise the balance of the funds needed for the project. So we have the incurrence of an ordinance that authorizes the issuance of $25 million of bonds. Again, that will not happen until a year from now. It also authorizes entering into the interest rate contract that will lock in an interest rate on that contract. That, with your approval tonight, we would hope to be able to lock in an interest rate within the next week. We're trying to beat that Fed meeting that is coming on Wednesday. There was a big jobs report on Friday. Jobs number was much stronger than what the estimates were. A lot of talk that may cause the Fed to raise rates four times this year rather than three. We think that will continue to put their rate increases would put pressure on long-term rates to rise. That's what we're trying to avoid and lock in a good rate for the project. So I will turn things over to Scott Shear, who's going to help walk you through their presentation.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening. Again, Scott Shear with PFM, also with John Fry, my colleague. So we're going to just briefly walk through the handout that I believe everyone has before them. I think Lou did a great job summarizing sort of why we're here this evening. So the main part of this handout is we're required by law to draft an interest rate management plan whenever one of our clients considers an interest rate hedge or some kind of municipal swap. And so what we did here, we took a lot of the details of that interest rate management plan and put it more in a PowerPoint format to make it a little bit more user-friendly to go through. But before John goes through some of those details that, again, we're required to discuss this evening, you know, I think we just wanted to walk through page two very briefly to get everyone reacclimated. Again, Lou already hit on a lot of the key points, but sort of what brought us to here, and as mentioned, you know, there's been a lot of planning with this process for the financial end of things for about the past 6 months or so. The finance team has been doing a lot of work, along with your administration and others, to have these documents ready for this evening. So why don't we first, you know, again, turn to page two to get ourselves resituated. I think everyone's aware of the first bullet point of the township's plan, you know, the designing and development stage of the new community center and rec center. That's obviously been a highlighted topic here over the past few months or so. The most recent cost estimate, somewhere in the $31 to $32 million price range, is what we've been doing our planning with. And again, I'd say that's up to the $32 million mark. There's versions that are a little bit lower than that from a cost estimate. From a timing standpoint, looking to break ground sometime next spring. So again, there's a lot of planning to do. But again, the main reason why we're here is today's interest rate levels are very attractive. So we want to, you know, again, make sure that the township is in the best proactive position to lock in interest rates and lock in a range of interest rate with this hedge, but not actually issue the debt until next spring. I think it's a very important concept that we're going through all the paperwork now, if you approve it this evening, but the actual issuance of the debt will not start until next spring, and that's when the actual debt service payments will begin to accrue and the township will start paying. In that time period between now and then, no debt service payments are due on the transactions that are under consideration for this evening. And again, as I already mentioned on point four, along with other funding sources that are being looked at, capital campaign is going to soon be underway, and those monies will be utilized towards the project in some manner as well. So again, I think the township is doing a lot of due diligence and really trying to turn over all the stones possible to look at other funding sources or all the funding sources that are available to cover the cost of this project. Points number five and six, I think Lou had already covered very well, that one of the documents that your bond council will be briefly reviewing this evening is the bond ordinance that incurs up to $25 million of debt. That's the actual financing piece that, you know, if you approve it this evening, again, that will not actually be effectuated until next spring or next summer when ultimately we decide to move forward on that financing. And again, that's those are points 5 and 6. Points 7 and 8 are relate to the cash settle hedge that we've been talking about. And again, I think the underlying information that we're all going under is that we are still at very low levels in the interest rate market. Kind of all signs, all information that's available to the finance team are pointing to higher interest rates in the future. The Fed, as Mr. Rodelli mentioned, looking, the Fed's going to be increasing rates by 100% chance here in a few days, probably 3 or 4 in total rate hikes this calendar year and more in 2019. So the whole point of this is to kind of capture today's low interest rates, even though the debt is not going to be issued until next year. So that resolution is before the supervisors this evening for your consideration for up to $25 million. And then the last part I think is very crucial is that none of this is being done in a vacuum. You know, I'd say the township is doing a very good job, supervisors, the administration, and the rest of the team, in kind of really doing, again, its due diligence, doing the analyses, looking at the overall township financings and budget holistically, looking specifically, you know, at this project, at this financing, but again, looking at creative ways, different ways to fund this project, you know, once it's ultimately approved, and overall manage the finances in the most efficient and palatable manner to the ratepayers and the taxpayers here in the township. So I think that piece sometimes goes missed with many municipalities where you kind of focus on a project, but not really look at everything in the big picture as a whole. And I think, again, the township is doing a very good job putting forth the effort to do that as well for the benefit of the township. So I think with that, I'll turn it over to John to review the rest of this presentation.
Great. Good evening, everyone. Again, my name is John Fry. I'm a colleague of Scott's at PFM. I'm going to go to page 4 of the handout, skipping over one of the pages that's already been reviewed. But on page 4, just briefly, again, is a diagram of the timeline for the interest rate hedge. Again, this is all done to try to mitigate interest rate risk. That's the point that the township is doing a very good job on trying to mitigate all its risk, and this is one of the things that this hedge provides. So in the timeline, we'd be able to trade date, if you will, is lock in that swap contract rate. And that is what Lou was pointing out, we'd probably be able to do in the next week or so as soon as all the documents are prepared and finalized. There's no exchange of payments. It's just locking in that swap contract rate for a future starting date. And we've made that future starting date correspond with the expectation of issuing bonds in June of 2019. So the timeline for the swap is there and mimics or corresponds with your financing program to help mitigate interest rate risk on those bonds. So this swap contract or hedge contract is really only in place until June of 19. So it's a short-term contract. It will mandatorily terminate at that time. You as the township do have the option to terminate prior to that date, what we call the forward period in the middle between now and June of 19. That is your option to terminate. We can monitor the market value of that contract and terminate as needed. We can advise you on those things as we move forward. So again, the contract will terminate on or before June 1 of 2019. And so on page 5, the concept of the hedge is what if interest rates move between now and then, and what happens? So if swap rates move higher, the counterparty, in this case RBC, would make a termination payment to the township at the time when you issue your bonds. You'd use that payment to lower the bonds, lower the par amount of the bonds that you issue, thus mitigating the fact that interest rates are higher because you're going to be reducing the amount of bonds that you need to borrow. Okay, so that's if swap rates are higher, and we'll show this in another page where it illustrates it with some numbers. If swap rates are lower than what you've executed, which is not the expectation of the economists out there in the world, but if swap rates would be lower next year at this time when you terminated, you would owe a payment to RBC because swap rates are lower. You would pay that in cash and then issue more bonds in 2019. But remember, you're doing that because interest rates are low. So you'd be borrowing more, but at lower interest rates, thus getting you back to today's levels. And that's really the point of the hedge, is interest rates are low and attractive today, and we're trying to get you as close to those results as we can on your future borrowing. So moving on to page six, one of the key components of when you're entering this in is there is no guarantee that it'll perform exactly the way you would expect, but if you look at the two indices on page six, what we're trying to hedge is the orange line, which is the bond index. You can see on the far right, rates have come up over the last several months, but are still very historically low. And you're using the blue rates, the swap, the LIBOR swap rates, which correspond very, very highly with bond rates. The only dislocation was in the 2008 financial crisis, where they dislocated for a period of a couple months. But you can see, other than those periods, they generally move up and down fairly routinely together. But there is what they call basis risk, that they're not going to move in lockstep. They don't move exactly the same every day, but generally if one goes up, the other generally goes up. But that is one of the key components. But again, we're here because rates are low, and you're trying to, you know, if rates, if that orange line goes higher, we're trying to mitigate and find a way to mitigate your costs from going up. So on page seven is the start, the next two pages are to illustrate what the cost of this hedge, to put this on. On page seven are the fees and the counterparty spread. When you're executing the swap rate, you take into account two things on this page are the fees and the spread to lock it in, and they equate in column four and the gold on the far bottom right of about 0.08%. About 8.6 basis points. So in round numbers, if you were locking in a rate of 250, the rate, because of the fees and the cost, is now a 258. So it gets built into the swap rate. And those are, you know, well within budget, and assume all the numbers we've been showing you assume these numbers. The next component on page eight is what we call the forward premium. And remember, we're locking in a rate today that doesn't start or become effective for a year from now. So sometimes there is a fairly significant cost to that, but because over the last year the Fed has been raising short-term rates, the yield curve is very flat, and that forward premium is very low, which makes it a very opportune time to lock in a forward rate. So in the middle of the box, in the gray, it says forward premium of about 5 basis points or 0.05%. Sometimes that it could be double or triple if the yield curve would be steeper, because the yield curve is so flat that it gives a good opportunity to lock this in. So the total estimate when you're adding the forward premium and the cost to put it on is an estimate of close to 14 basis points, which would be the cost of the swap to enter into, again, which is very low from an historical perspective. On page nine, as illustrated in the interest rate management plan, which is attached to resolution, is just the swap contract termination table, showing what happens if rates stay the same, if they go up or if they go down. The swap contract has a value every day based upon the movement of swap rates. And this is what is illustrated on page nine. But that's just the swap contract. The real picture of how the swap contract interplays with the bonds is shown on the next page, on page 10. Because while the swap contract is one part of the interplay, the bonds are obviously the other part. So on page 10, and I think Mr. Verdelli went through some of these things in previous meetings, but the point of the hedge is that if you just did bonds of $25 million in the blue, if rates don't change, your yield, and we'll just use this in round numbers, is about 4% in column two in the blue. And what we're really trying to protect against is if rates go up 1% over the next year, and now you'd be borrowing at a whole 100 basis points or 1% higher, the cost, you know, goes from 4% to 5%. It can be millions of dollars of debt service. So how do you mitigate that is the use of this interest rate hedge. And that's what we show in the gold on the far, the following three columns, is in that same instance, if rates went up 100 basis points next year, on column six, the township would receive, these numbers come from the prior page, the township would receive $2.3 million from RBC, use that to downsize the amount of bonds you'd issue, which helps to mitigate the fact that interest rates are higher, therefore getting you back to that same kind of 4% level. And if rates stay the same as they are today, exactly the same, the township would owe about $380,000 of a termination payment to RBC, because that equates to about the 14 basis points of cost to put this trade on. But again, the key component here is on in that blue oval, that no matter if rates go up or down or stay the same, as long as the historical relationship between bond rates and swap rates maintain as they've done in the past, your yields are more uniform across all different levels of interest rate changes. So instead of them going to 5%, you can see in that blue oval they're all in the low 4%. And that's kind of the whole point, is to try to mitigate and protect against that significant increase in debt service. The next page, I'll just on page 11, what we did is just ran a lot of different numbers showing what if interest rates in the pink went against you by 20 basis points. So there wasn't a lockstep movement between bond rates and the hedge rates, and it would go 20 basis points against the township. All that happens is it's 20 basis points higher than the previous page, but you can still see they're all still on the 4% range. And on the far right, just as it could go 20 basis points against you, it could also go 20 basis points in favor of the township, and then the rates, your overall yield comes down even further. But again, it's the whole point is not, in this instance, not seeing that there's no 5% on the page, because it's trying to mitigate that risk. And I'll just close on the next two pages are just some of the considerations that we need to disclose when you're entering into these. On page 12, project risk, you know, we want one of our clients to enter into a hedge if they didn't have a certainty that they were going to issue bonds in the future. Certainly the township has done a lot of due diligence and foresight in projecting a plan for the project. This hedge is for $25 million, and as the, you know, there's a borrowing that you're all been planning, do a lot of due diligence on that. At the bottom of page 12, the hedge will have a value every day, and at the end of the fiscal year, you'll need to put that into your audit, whatever the value is for that last day of the year. And then on page 13, just summing up some of the remote risks inherent in any swap, we talked about the major risks so far. One of them is that the only time that the counterparty, in this case RBC, has the option to terminate is if you would get downgraded. But in this case, it would be five notches lower the whole way down to BBB+ over the next year. So we would view that as very remote. Market access risk in the middle of the page is the ability to get into the market and issue bonds. Certainly with your AA, very strong credit rating of the township that you should be proud of, that is a very remote risk that you would not be able to go into the bond market. Counterparty risk is kind of the opposite of the other kind is, have you selected a bank that has a good credit rating? Can RBC, if they owe you money, can they perform? And you have selected a counterparty with a very strong credit rating. And finally, legislative or policy risks. Is there any kind of risk that there's legislation that would pass that would prohibit or change the use of these swaps? And again, because it's such a short-term contract, these risks are reviewed as very remote. And I know you've been reviewing this concept of the hedge for several months, but we wanted to go through that. And those points are provided, again, in your interest rate management plan, which is attached to your resolution. But happy, I know our team is happy to answer any questions that you might have.
The members of the board have any questions or comments?
Okay, I'll turn it over to Mr. Claudel. Thank you.
Good evening. David Claudel from Eckert Stevens, serving as your bond counsel. There are two action items before you this evening. The first would be consideration of ordinance number 703 that would authorize the issuance of general obligation bonds in a maximum principal amount of $25 million. This is what we refer to sometimes as a parameters debt incurrence ordinance, where we are authorizing debt to be issued, but we have not concluded all the final terms, so we're going to set some parameters, an issue size, a maximum interest rate, in this case 5.5%, and a range of prices varying from 90 cents per bond to 125%. All of the details of those bonds would be negotiated at the time you're actually ready to issue the bonds, expected to be next spring or early summer. At that point, you would approve an addendum to this ordinance that would set forth the final specific terms of the bonds. We sometimes do this kind of parameters borrowing when you are trying to get very quickly into the market and you don't want to have to wait for a next meeting of the supervisors. Once you've incurred this debt, you'll be able to, in a sense, pull the trigger based upon the best market available and finalize that sale of bonds instantly without the need of advertising another meeting and publishing the ordinance and so forth. All of those procedures will be accomplished now. In this case, the other reason that we need to take this action is that in order for you to enter into the interest rate management swap, you must attach that swap under law to a particular issue of debt. So since we're doing this to manage the interest rate risk on the debt to be incurred for the recreation project, we'll have you incur the debt, but it won't actually be issued until you're ready to close on the financing. But for state law purposes, it is considered incurred and will show up on the debt of the township at state records and so forth. In a worst-case scenario, you are not obligated to eventually issue the bonds. The township could make a decision not to do that. You can vary the size of the issue. You could actually, if necessary, ultimately repeal this ordinance and replace it with a different ordinance for a different type of bonds, different structure. That said, I think your financing team at this point believes that a general obligation long-term fixed rate bond issue for the debt component of this financing is probably the most sensible. $25 million at this point seems like a reasonable estimate for the maximum size of that as you explore the other funding options. And that will allow us to put a size on the interest rate swap. The ordinance takes the form of a typical Debt Act ordinance. It has been advertised in accordance with the requirements of the Debt Act. Should you enact it this evening, there will be a post-enactment advertisement. We have with us this evening to leave with you the required filing documents with DCED. We'll make that filing and expect the department to release its approval within the next 20 days or so. Anytime after that, the bonds could be issued. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have about the Debt Act ordinance. Following that, I'll take a look at the resolution.
Thank you very much for your comments. Any questions, comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion that the adoption of ordinance number 703 authorizing the issue of future general obligation bonds in the amount of $25 million for the community center project on or before June 1st, 2019, and the adoption of resolution 1549 authorizing a cash settlement hedge for $25 million with a mandatory termination date of June 1st, 2009 be approved.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Engel.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zamuda. Any, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And that motion carries unanimously. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Turning our attention to the next item of business, B1-6, is consideration of the adoption of a decision for conditional use request number 2017-5. It's filed by David Romanowski for a single-family dwelling conversion at 364 Mill Street. Mr. Emery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This conditional use was in front of the Planning Commission on February 6th, at which point they recommended approval by the board. The board held its public hearing on this on February 13th, 2018, pretty much exactly a month ago. We've drafted a approval decision for the conditional use. Within that decision are a few conditions. One is that the applicant show at time of building permit that the utility connections are in accordance with the rules and regulations of the utilities, that 9 off-street parking spaces are provided, that action be taken to fulfill this within a 12-month period, either through a building permit or a zoning permit. those are pretty much the highlights of the conditions. Staff is recommending approval of this conditional use application.
Any questions by members of the board? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion that the decision with the conditional use application number 2017-5 be approved.
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Court. Second by Mr. Weir. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that's granted unanimously. Next item on the agenda is consideration of a proposed demolition of an existing building and the construction of a new hotel at 204 Hillcrest Road, Hershey, within the downtown core overlay zoning district. Is that Dechuk or?
That is.
Okay.
I'm going to apologize. I had to switch out a computer. We're having some technical difficulties. And at least from my vantage, this isn't very bright. Is it the same?
No.
Pretty dim.
Yeah.
Maybe we could kill a light and we can get something you guys can see.
It's a little better. Not much, but it's more.
A little better. When we get to the color images, hopefully it'll be a little bit better. So, In accordance with our downtown design core standards, any action that requires the demolition of an existing building or the establishment of a new building requires ultimate approval by the Board of Supervisors. So this application was in before the design board. They are recommending approval as presented. The first part is demolition of the existing building. The existing building is the Memmi Bakery adjacent to the Italian Lodge. That's really bad. Sure. We're going to try a different computer, and I'll explain the rest of the agenda item while we're doing that. Just give us one sec. While we're adjusting things here, the applicant is Central PA Equities 29 LLC. That is the same company that built the hotel on the former township building site. They're proposing a new True brand hotel. It'll be a 5-story, 112-room hotel that it'll sit on the site of the former Memmi Bakery. When presented to the design core, our downtown core ordinance requires an 8-foot sidewalk. That's much better. Thanks. You could open up the elevations a while. Also. Our downtown core design ordinance requires an 8-foot wide sidewalk. The applicant requested from the design board relief to put in a 5-foot wide sidewalk consistent with other sidewalks in this neighborhood. And again, the design board granted that waiver. The applicant has worked with staff, and this was actually one of Chris Brown's last meetings here with the township, having some influence on this building. This is just slightly different from their prototype in that they're adding some stone along the foundation of the building to give it a more earthy feel. They've adjusted their colors to be within the color palette as permitted by our downtown design standards, which we're using the Benjamin Moore Colonial Williamsburg tablet. Yeah, go ahead. And you can flip back and forth. So the colors that they're using are Damascus Gold, Lafayette Blue, Anderson Blue, Prussian Blue, and Carter Plum. They don't seem to render really well on this. The actual blue that I think most people are first struck with is much more muted in the palette as seen on Benjamin Moore's site. As I said, the The design board did make a recommendation to approve this, and understanding that the applicant has worked with the township in developing the site. Let's just talk about the site a little bit, if we could, the site plan. So this building will favor Hillcrest with no access to Mill Street. As you can, as you know, there's quite a bit of relief on this property, and you'll see that the site will be supported by a retaining wall, which will keep the parking at the same level as the hotel. There was a conscientious effort to push the hotel towards the street and have the parking in the back, really to help protect and buffer the adjacent residential neighborhood from people coming home from the park, to their new home from the park, the rooms from the park, lights of the cars, and so on. So that's the reason that the site's laid out as such. The applicant is here. The intended owner is here. If you have questions for any of us, we're happy to address them.
Chuck, the motion that is going to be on the floor is for the demolition of the existing building, and this is for approval of the design as well?
That's correct.
And Chris Brown indicated that that design is consistent with our downtown.
This hotel is on the edge of our downtown, and I think some consideration was given for that. It is adjacent or across the street from the other hotel owned by the same people, which has a predominance of EPIS material. So it won't be unlike other hotels in the neighborhood or even the Super 8. The things that were worked out ahead of what you've seen is some of the indents in the building to keep it from having, some of the indents and shadow lines of the building to keep it from having just a very stark look. The inclusion of the stone base, which will also then match into the stone walls that will become part of the property.
And the final invasion envisions this wing-like structure up front?
This is actually the rear.
No, that's the rear?
Sure. This is the side that faces the parking lot. So this would be entrance front. This side faces the neighborhood.
And you're saying that blue in reality will be muted?
Will be a different shade than what's shown on these renderings, yes. I was not at the design board meeting where this was presented. Lauren was, and she keeps whispering things.
Lauren, you're trying to please.
I'm going to
give any insight, please.
Yeah. So the, everything that the applicant's proposing right now is in accordance with the downtown core design standards that that we have. They did bring swatches to the meeting. I don't know if you have those with you tonight. No. But the design board was able to pass those around, take a look at them, and I think we're generally comfortable, enough to issue a recommendation of appropriateness. The other thing that the applicant worked with us to do was really to design, recognizing that this, recognizing that this building really has three frontages in terms of the road, kind of being thoughtful about that as they're pulling together the design. So that what you see here is different than what is shown on the prototype that you'll see on Route 30. And they were able to work with us to really design. They were careful and thoughtful about how they designed the building in terms of really making it look like it has two fronts. So along Hillcrest here, what you see is actually the back, what would be the back of the building. But they added this element here in the doorway. I have no idea what's doing that. I'm sorry. I don't know.
I've got the computer working.
Nobody's being electrocuted down there.
Is there a cable leading into your microphone?
There.
No.
No. I'm not sure. I'm just going to try not to touch anything.
Keep going.
Okay. So the they really designed this building to make it appear as though there were two front entrances, trying to be thoughtful about the street appearance and how it looks. So what you see here is how it would look on Hillcrest. This is actually the rear of the structure, and then the what they would consider to be their front entrance, which is inward facing to the site.
Right. Are those colors and that wing-like structure up front, or in the back, a trademark or a branding requirement for this property?
The variation of the colors are branding. Again, they went to the Benjamin Moore Colonial Williamsburg palette to choose the colors. So the Derry Township one will be slightly different than their prototype. I don't know how, I think this is probably closer to the true color than the renderings, than the elevations.
Right. Still not exact, but I think everyone sort of agreed, the yellow is more gold and the blue is a little more muted and the red is more of a burgundy color.
Is Chuck, that branding on the parking lot side, is that whole wing considered a sign?
No, not the way that the new ordinance was written. The background is discounted, and we just look at the letters as they project from the building. I will tell you that even the signage on this building is different than any of the prototypes that exist today, and I don't know that this signage exists on any trues today. Their normal sign is a medallion, a circle, that so far exceeded our sign standards that they actually have permission to use what's shown on here to be more compliant with their signage. Again, what you don't see is all the things that happened in the background to get to where we are today. The applicant has been very gracious in making modifications to come very close to what we'd like to see.
Yeah, and I was at the design meeting, architecture and color are very subjective. So some people will like it, some people will not. But to your point, Chuck, not only did the developer work with you guys, but you guys made great recommendations, I think, too. It's like the prototype, but there's little differences that, in my view, made the building look more quality. And just to point out a few, the crown at the very top. So if you notice, the prototype didn't have any type of crown there. And so I think it was a recommendation of staff, and the developer went along with that. The guidelines call for articulation on the front of the building, similar to what's being built in downtown Hershey right now, where the front of the buildings aren't just flat. And so it's my understanding that the prototype normally had one articulation in the middle, and you can see that they went out of their way to make two articulations. The TRU, if you look at the prototype, I think this is much more attractive and downplayed from the prototype that is on most buildings. A little small detail, all of the windows, you almost have to see a picture of other hotel properties to appreciate it, but the grate that accommodates the HVAC unit, the PTAC unit, is really the whole span of the window, so the windows look very symmetrical. Again, if you look online, oftentimes that's sort of, it's not centered on the window, it's sometimes to the right or the left, and it makes the building look a little less quality, in my opinion. The stone is a great improvement, and I guess the only two comments I would make is that it would be nice, I don't think there's any obligation to do the arborvitae like they're pictured, but I think that looks nice against the stone. And then the other comment would be, I think that in follow-up to the design meeting, there was maybe a realization about the fence.
Right.
And it's a chain link fence, and can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, so initially we had discussed the chain link fence. I think you guys had some correspondence with Brandon, and my understanding is you're in good shape there to do what's required by ordinance. Is that correct? So this chain link fence is not permitted by our guidelines. We wouldn't be able to technically issue permits showing that, but they are agreeing to provide a more decorative fencing, similar to the one that you see at the Fairfield, correct?
Laura, will that fence have to come back before the Downtown Design Review Board? Or is that just in good faith that it will be better than chain link?
Well, we wouldn't be able to issue a permit. Chuck's department would be able to issue a permit without showing that fence, and because it complies, they wouldn't necessarily need to go back to have it approved again.
Right. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, and to Teresa's point, this building will stick up. I mean, that's sort of a pinnacle in town, and it will be noticeable. And some of us believe that all of the architecture that comes along should sort of match older architecture in Hershey. Some people believe that there should be a mix of architecture. So that's all really personal preference.
I don't so much mind the height of it. I mean, it is what it is.
It's five stories.
Yeah, so it's pretty tall. But, which makes the color scheme even more important.
I'm getting hung up on the colors too, and unfortunately I wasn't able to go to the design
meeting.
I was out of town, but knowing Williamsburg colors, those are not Williamsburg colors, so I have to trust that if they're going Williamsburg colors, those are not accurate.
Yeah.
And I don't know if maybe the applicant or anyone wants to speak on about the project, but if you could maybe compare this to the other hotel and some size differences and anything else that you could offer.
And also the it's purely subjective, that triangular thing.
I'm David Hogue with the developer. And your question was comparing this to which other hotel, the Fairfield next door?
Correct, yes.
Okay. They're roughly the same size. The Fairfield is also five stories. The Fairfield has very little of the stone, just on the columns of the porte cochere up front. This hotel carries the stone all the way around the entire first floor. Chris Brown's opinion of that was we want to make the approach, the first story approach, look like a more natural material. So that's what we did. The angled part of the wall is a brand prototype feature, but as was already pointed out by staff, there's no true in the world that has this sign on it. Not only is it maximum 3 feet on the true letters, but it's also a halo sign, so there's no internal illumination that shines directly out. It all splashes back on the wall to make the letters appear to hover on the wall. It took some convincing with Hilton to get them to do that, but it's what we needed to do to get it approved, and I think all of us agree that they're going to like it so much when they see it that it may become a new standard.
Prototype.
Yeah.
I got a quick question about the lighting. You mentioned about the cars coming back from the park.
Yes.
What's the lot lighting like? Will that because it's a neighborhood hotel.
It is.
So how is that going to affect the people in the neighborhood? So not only on the back but on the front end too.
Good question. There will be very limited lighting on the Hillcrest side. We'll have one parking lot light at the main entrance to illuminate the entrance. We recently met with leadership of the Italian Lodge to talk about that because the ordinance requires abrupt cutoffs of all the lights on the entire perimeter, and in working on a shared access agreement with the Italian Lodge, they encouraged us to come to you folks and ask for permission not to cut that light off because they like the light to splash over to their building at the main driveway. So we agreed with them that it made sense not to cut that light off. So the three lights that will be on the driveway side will allow light to splash over to the Italian Lodge. All the other lights around the entire perimeter are going to have that abrupt cutoff. Now, that said, there's nothing to stop the building from glowing, from lights reflecting on it. So it'll have that glow as you look at it from the west side. But there won't be much glow at all. when it's viewed from Hillcrest because we're not lighting that side of the building.
And then there's enough light there for security for the absolutely folks that are staying there.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking about the sight of this coming down almost downhill. You're going to probably be able to see this hotel glowing when you're coming down 322. You're going to see it glowing. It's up on a hill. It's not like Fairfield down the valley.
Fairfield is definitely hidden. Yes.
And coming down Reba Avenue, you're going to see it glowing. And it's a lot of branding for coming into Hershey.
It's unique architecture for sure. And we've gone through a number of different design iterations, from one that looked like it was almost all brick to the prototype to this in between, and where we wound up with the unanimous decision of the design board, and with, I think, everybody with staff also agreed that this was the best approach to capture the flavor of the true design without, I think it was described as the Tinker Toy, the full Tinker Toy effect. So it's a muted version of the architecture that does fit the downtown core design criteria.
You know, going on what Matt was saying, you know, Memmi's was, a three-story building by itself. So you're only adding another two stories onto it, so it's not going to be crazy tall.
Is there, roughly, this would count at the, so the Fairfield is five stories?
It is.
This is five stories.
Correct.
And the site difference is maybe 30 feet, so this might be 30 feet.
20 feet or so difference in elevation.
So this would be 20 feet higher than the Fairfield.
So because of that different grade,
yeah,
because the finished floor is roughly 20 feet higher than the Fairfield, this will also be roughly 20 feet higher. It'll be visible from some directions in the summertime, but from other directions, the trees of the Italian Lodge will hide it.
So you could, so the highest point at the old bakery, now the silo, the old flour silo, so that sticks up, you know, I don't know how far, but above the building.
Oh, it's three stories.
Yeah.
That angular portion, this is a prototype, right?
There is a prototype. This building is not the prototype, but it's the wing wall, whatever you call it, yeah. It's part of the wall. It only is the part that's built out from the wall is really very small. It's mostly incorporates the wall of the hotel, but it does come out at an angle.
You're insistent on that, huh?
we've pushed Hilton much farther than I thought they could be pushed.
Okay, that's fair enough, and I believe me, I appreciate the concessions that you've made coming to the work team time with that. I'm just asking. Anything else?
It'd be good to have something active and viable in that spot.
A couple of things. The sidewalk will not be on Mill Street. Is that going to be Damon and Lou of? In that area, Chuck?
Yes, it will.
Okay, and the excavation for the stormwater best management practice, a lot of rock there. Is that going to affect the neighbors and their foundations when they blast through that rock to get a stormwater best management practice in there?
So this is still to go through land development plan? I don't know where you are in stormwater design. We've not seen anything at this point.
Good evening, Jim Snyder from Snyder Sakari Associates. We have filed the land development plan just a week ago. Stormwater, this site is essentially in a fill condition, so the excavation will be, you know, very minimal. And certainly we understand sinkholes are a risk on this property as well, and we're designing this site so that it does not infiltrate, that it's more of a water quality approach. So. We'll be working through the township and the conservation district relative to that, but your point is well taken.
Anyone else? If not, I'll entertain a motion that the Board of Supervisors approves the demolition of the existing building at 204 Hillcrest Road and the design of the new hotel as depicted on the information submitted to Gary Township on February 9th, 2018, and that the board further approves the requested modification from section 89-14.A, subsection 2 of the downtown core design standards regarding sidewalk width. I'll entertain a motion.
You want to make the motion?
Motion made by Mr. Zamuda, second.
I'll second.
By Ms. Corp. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? And the motion carries.
I have a request. As you move forward, if there's any way to maintain any piece of the Memmi Bakery to put inside your building as a monument to what was there and a big part of the fabric of the community, I'm sure people would appreciate that.
That's great.
Next item on the agenda is waiver of the required well isolation distance of 505 Hilltop Road. Septic system replacement in accordance with the PA Department of Environmental Resources best technical guidance policy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the Pennsylvania Code does allow the township to waive well isolation distance to enable the corrective measures to a malfunctioning on-lot septic system. In this case, the request has been received from Carol Caroni for her property at 505 Hilltop Road. Her system is presently malfunctioning, and she's working with Gordy Sheets, her design consultant, to establish a best technical guidance repair. The situation is that her existing septic system that is not functioning properly is approximately 83 feet from her well, so it doesn't presently today meet the isolation distance. The new system that she will be installing is an Elgin GSF, which is almost an artificial system. It uses biomat and sand to renovate the sewage effluents. It's thought that this system will have less of a chance of well contamination than a standard system. Finally, the repair will be isolated more than 100 feet away from any well on an adjacent site. When using best technical guidance to waive the well isolation distance, the applicant is to look at closing or relocation of the well, and in this case, they felt that there's steep slopes and a wooded area that would greatly inhibit their ability to relocate it unless they had to. I would have to agree. So in this case, we've prepared an agreement and release for the applicant to sign to hold the township harmless in the event of any future well contamination. That agreement has been reviewed by John Yost. So I'm looking for approval for the well isolation waiver contingent upon the agreement and release being signed by the applicant and recorded at Dolph County Recorder of Deeds office.
Chuck, where are the city sewer lines and municipal sewer lines?
Another thing that you are to explore when waiving the well isolation distance is what's the chance of bringing public sewer there. Wayne assured me that there is not a chance of bringing public sewer there.
I have a question for John. In the event that the applicant breaches the agreement and release, what the recourse does the township have?
Shut it down.
Well, but then the damage is already done, right? I mean, what sort of remediation responsibilities would the township have?
We have the right to require them to do what they agreed to do as part of this agreement.
And if they refuse, we sue them.
Of course, like we do.
If.
And monetary damages would be assessed, perhaps?
If necessary.
Yeah. And if I could answer a little bit of that, Mark. Really, the hold harmless agreement is as much to get them to acknowledge that they may contaminate their well and that they've chosen this path on their own as any kind of enforcement. So it's really, and it'll be recorded, so it will be available to any future purchaser of the property.
So there's going to be a hold harmless clause in here
for us.
To our benefit.
Okay. And it meets the requirements of the neighbors.
Well, isolation distance.
Yeah. So okay. They wouldn't need an agreement if they could have done that.
Right.
And that's my concern. If there's a grievance initiated by a party other than the applicant.
The hold harmless agreement is not required by law, and many townships, actually from what I understand from both Gordy Sheets and our own SEO, many townships allow the SEO to make this decision on granting the waiver for well isolation distance. I wasn't comfortable doing that in Derry Township. I wanted this to come before the board, and I also wanted the hold harmless agreement so that it was on record in a recorded form that this isolation distance does not meet the standard.
And it would be a durable document that would pass with the deed?
That's the way it's written.
Okay. My big concern is that someone other than the applicant bring suit against the applicant, and in the event that the applicant is rendered judgment proof somehow, that the township then would be responsible for any damages that would be experienced by a third party.
The agreement is binding on her successors and assigns. This will be a recorded agreement. So if she sold it to somebody else, they have the same responsibility that she does.
Right, I understand that, but I'm looking to belabor the point, but in the event a third party says, for example, that this well, or something, it contaminates a third party's property or damages it somehow.
If it's meeting the 100-foot isolation distance, then we're held harmless.
Okay.
If they're meeting the code.
That's the information.
And it's a good question about the sale of the properties. I understand the system's being repaired to sell the property.
Yep.
All the more reason that I want an agreement on record and something that had to be disclosed.
Right. Get it in the deep. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion that board supervisors waive the well isolation requirement and authorize the township manager to execute an agreement and release on behalf of the township, provided that Carol Maroney executes the agreement and release and thereafter records the document in the office of the recorder of deeds of Dauphin County. Anyone give me a motion? So moved by Mr. Engel. Second by Mr. Weir, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. The next order of business is approval of Ordinance 704 to establish a 25 mile per hour speed limit on Forest Avenue for the entire length. Chief?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Based on speeding concerns expressed by residents of Forest Avenue, the roadway in the area was looked at, and in order to establish a speed limit on this roadway, which currently does not have a posted speed limit, authorization is found within the Pennsylvania Vehicle Code to establish a 25 mile per hour speed limit in a residence district when the highway is classified as a local highway and is not a numbered traffic route. Forest Avenue meets all the criteria defined in the Vehicle Code and can therefore be posted at 25 mile per hour speed limit without the need for further study. This was approved for advertisement on February 13th and was in the Hummelstown Sun on February 22nd. We are now at the point to vote on the ordinance. Just to simplify things, they want us to take a look at the speeding on the roadway, and we can't do that without a speed limit. So it kind of eases it for us. So there'll be six new signs that will need to be posted in order to properly enforce and look at speed regulations in that area.
Excellent. Any questions or comments? I'll entertain a motion in Ordinance Number 704, amending the code of the Township of Derry, Ordinance Number 553, Chapter 210, Section 210-12, maximum speed limits established on certain streets. By establishing a 25 mile an hour speed limit on Forest Avenue, be hereby approved. Moved by Ms. Court, I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and that motion carries unanimously. Final item on the agenda is a request of the closure of Reese Avenue from Millard Street to West Entrance Road to the Reese's Plain on Saturday, March 17, 2018 at 10 a.m. Again, Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The request was received from Sabrina Frazier, the Reese's Plant Operations Manager, to close a portion of Reese Avenue for the annual Reese's Employees Family Easter Egg Hunt. The event is to take place on Saturday, March 17th at 10 a.m., and there is a rain date. That would be Saturday, March 31st at 10 a.m. They're asking for the roadway to be closed only from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. This is an annual event. I'm not sure which year we're in for this annual event, but it's been held each year. We ask Public Works to place some barricades out, and then the people at Reese's actually place those barricades out. We have somebody from patrol go over just to make sure everything is good with the placement of the barricades for that time period when they have it closed.
Any additional police resources going to be designated?
No.
Is the Easter Bunny going to be there?
I would assume so, but I have no confirmation.
They have to wait as
far as Mark. The chairman.
I think there'll be some Reese's peanut butter eggs there.
If there's candy in it, I'll be there.
I'm pretty sure.
I'll entertain a motion that the request to close Reese Avenue from the Large Street to the West entrance serves the Reese's plan on March 17, 2018, with a rain date of March 31st, 2018, from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. be approved. I'll make the motion. Any second?
Second.
Mr. Engel seconds. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And that carries unanimously. Next item on the agenda is correspondence of board committee information. Mr. Zamuda.
I have nothing.
Thank you. Ms. Court.
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Police department, any reports?
Actually, a few things. Just wanted to let the board know that Sergeant Steve Beard has completed a series through FEMA. It emphasizes applied skills in disaster operations, management, and coordination. So he has received his certificate of advanced professional series through FEMA in that discipline. And then a couple other things. We had tabled an ordinance last meeting for a parking restriction on Ward Street. Lieutenant Faree went out and met with a representative from Reese's, and also the dentist at the corner of Lamar Street and Reese Avenue. Excuse me. They looked at what types of commercial vehicles are coming in and out of Reese's on any side. What they came up with was a solution that will not, at this time, require an ordinance. Section 3353 of the Vehicle Code prohibits parking within 20 feet of a crosswalk. So at that intersection between on Lard Street, parallel to Reese Avenue, there is a crosswalk. Even though it's not marked, there is an imaginary crosswalk there, and you're not allowed to park within 20 feet of that by vehicle code. So what they are going to do is just post that restriction for that 20 feet from the crosswalk. So usually, if you take into account the crosswalk and then the 20 feet, you're looking at probably about 25 to 27 feet from the intersection. Post that, it'll only take maybe one or two parking spaces away from that intersection, and they believe with the types of vehicles that are going in and out that it will provide safe passage for those vehicles to turn out there. There is one time a month when they have a commercial vehicle, combination vehicle come in to move equipment, and I think what we're going to try to do in that time is have Reese's contact the police department, and we'll temporarily post that a little bit further down Millard Street for just that one day when they have to move that larger piece of equipment in and take care of things that way. And that way we don't have to restrict all that parking along Millard Street. Then the other issue was actually came up today at the Transportation Committee meeting. Lieutenant Perry went out and looked at the intersection of West Chocolate Avenue and Valley Road for the crosswalk issue there. He felt the location of the crosswalk is probably best where it is right now. There's some things that go into that. The location of the bus stop for CAT is in front of Representative Mahaffey's office. There's the parking that we discussed on the side of that same building, restricting the pedestrian flow. There would need to be a sidewalk extension on the north side from the sidewalk out to the curb line if we would go on the east side of the intersection, and there would also be the need for some curb cuts. And then also another thing that kind of factored in is just the familiarity of people with that west side crosswalk. They know where it's at. and where they need to get to, and even though we still have issues with it and we still deal with it, there are motorists that are local that know it's on the west side as well. So our recommendation is not moving it at this time.
Thanks for looking at that so quickly.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I
gave it to him right as soon as we got out of the meeting, and he came back to me relatively shortly after.
It's a reasonable approach. Yeah. And also, thanks for working on with the property owners there in Millard, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Pershing Volunteer Fire Department.
I have nothing this evening, sir.
Public Works, Tom.
I have nothing this evening.
Laura?
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Terry?
Also have nothing. Thank you.
Matt?
Nothing left.
Okay. Matt? Matt, too.
No report, please.
Okay. Charles? Lauren? Come on.
it's spring grant season. Just a quick note that I've been working with Tom, and his department to look into a program. We're looking to apply for funding for two tow-behind leaf pickers, vacuums. So that would be an application through DEP. I should have more information to you on that shortly. It's the same program that funded the grinder. I believe the 90-10, 10% matching. So it's a pretty good one to go after. The other thing that I just wanted to bring up quickly tonight was an update on the Sandhill Road relocation Hope Drive extension project that we've been discussing for several months in our transportation committee meetings and having collaborative discussions with Penn State Health and the CRAES. I'll have, again, more information on this project at the next meeting, but wanted to look for authorization to move forward with preparation of the application. This project, if the parties agree to collaborate, would involve the relocation of Sandhill Road as it's being proposed as part of the crossings development, and also the extension of Pope Drive to connect with Sandhill Road. What we would be looking at from a township perspective is essentially coming in as a partner to facilitate the funding application. We have about $70,000 remaining in DCIB funding from the Walton Avenue project that could be used as our local commitment, and the remainder of matching funds we'd be looking for from the two participating parties. So we're still continuing discussions with them. We would need to have letters of commitment in hand for the grant application, and then you would need to approve a resolution at your meeting on March 27th to actually go forward with the submission. So at this point, just wanted to give an update and looking for a nod to move forward. It would be approximately a $2.96 million request.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Joe?
Nothing, thank you.
I will go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure you're comfortable with me moving forward with the preparation of the application, or if the board has any questions.
Are there any matching requirements for that on our part?
Only the $70,000 that we already have left over from the DCIB from the other project.
And we've already addressed that a couple times.
So what's the total project?
Cost. The total project cost is roughly just over $6 million. We'd be looking at $2 million, these numbers might get refined, $2,968,000 request. And the contributing partners would be hopefully coming in with roughly $3 million match.
I think the board's in consensus of moving forward on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I will entertain a motion to approve accounts payable in the amount of $401,970.26 and payroll in the amount of $349,768.94.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Engel.
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Court. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, and those approvals are granted unanimously. And now is the time and place for the second visitor public comments. Anybody wishing to address the board, please approach the podium. Identify yourself by stating your name and your place of residence, and if you keep your comments limited to 3 minutes or less, it would be greatly appreciated. Seeing nobody, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Mr. Weir. Second by Mr. Zamuda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And this meeting adjourned.